Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I am joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the third season of Titans. And this is a show based, obviously, on the new Teen Titans and such, but it really feels they read a different series than I did. At least they're going after a very different tone than I feel the new Teen Titans series had in its heyday. And I was amazed how many plot points and stories they were drawing inspiration from for this season were Batman stories versus Titans stories. Because they kind of merged almost thematic aspects, I want to say of Killing Joke, although they didn't really touch too much directly on that, but absolutely pulled story points from A Death in the Family with the death of Jason Todd.
Mm-hmm.
They reworked it to make it fit their continuity. But then they also had the story that introduced Tim Drake.
Yeah.
Pulled in here, which I'm blanking on the name of that story, but that was one Sam and I did a back issue spotlight on that one as well. And they intertwined those two stories, and they took place about a year apart in the comics. And there were some direct lifts out of both of those into this.
To me, it makes more sense that they would be a year apart.
Yeah.
In terms of Batman needing to kind of go through a loss and a grieving period before replacing.
Well, that's the thing, is he didn't replace, just like here, where Tim was basically, I'm going to be the next Robin. Batman had gotten to a point where he'd gone kind of dark, and in the comics, Tim realized he needed a Robin to kind of balance and to pull him out of that darkness and such, and basically kind of applied for the role. So the scene where he was in Wayne Manor explaining to Dick Grayson, your Nightwing, all this kind of stuff, more or less happened almost exactly like that in Wayne Manor in the comics. I forget if it was with Bruce or Dick or both of them in there that he was explaining to. I think it was both, actually, with Alfred there too. And, I mean, it made sense to pull those things in for the stories they were trying to do and such. But again, while the Titans were in the intro to Tim Drake, because that was his five-issue story that went, you know, Batman, New Titans, Batman, New Titans, Batman kind of a thing. It just, again, feels a little strange for them to pull so much Batman. I mean, the whole season was set in Gotham.
Yeah.
To pull so much Batman mythos into it. Well, and it's funny because we see Bruce Wayne quite a bit this season. I don't think we have seen Batman at all in this series.
I don't think so. And I feel we should clarify that it was actual Bruce Wayne, not hallucination Bruce Wayne.
Yes, yes. This season we get the real one, not the... Although there were plenty of dream sequences to be had this season.
There were. And there was a point at which I was starting to wonder if the whole season was going to turn out to have been some kind of warped dream sequence or something.
Yeah, well, I think having the Scarecrow as the main villain of the season, again, very Batman-esque plotline there, was an odd choice for Titans show, but also lent itself to the dream sequence, the nightmare, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And we got that a few times. We also got an entire episode set in the afterlife.
Yes.
And it explained how we got Donna back, because she had died at the end of last season. It kind of gave a farewell for Hawk, who'd been blown up earlier, you know, an episode or two earlier in the series this time, and brought back to life somebody else who, if they died, would have had a very short story. So, I mean,
but we had left them kind of at the, are they bleeding out or not? So for them, it made sense to be at that kind of, are you going to go towards the light or not moment?
They were at the decision point, so to speak.
Yeah.
And it's funny because when we then get that sort of decision point for another character, I don't want to give everything away.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like the same sort of afterlife.
Well, they were going through the Lazarus pit.
That's true.
First of all, which is a very different experience.
And again, bringing the Lazarus pit in is a very Batman thing.
But the Lazarus pit felt very different here than it did in Arrow.
It did and it didn't. I'm trying to remember which series has resurrected more people. I think by the end of the season, this did.
Yeah. But I thought in Arrow, you kind of came out of it with sort of a bloodlust.
Yes, they definitely played more with that there than here.
Whereas here,
it's a get out of death free card.
It's a combination of that, but almost a, I don't want to say you face your greatest fear, because that wasn't quite it. But you have this kind of confrontation that you have to deal with, and you either come out of it a better or worse person.
Did we get that kind of confrontation thing?
We don't know what the first person to go through the pit went through. We didn't get to see it. We only saw it with the second person to go through the pit.
Well, and it feels weird because it doesn't feel like they went through the same ordeal as, or the first one didn't go through the same ordeal as the second. And that, again, that death and coming back was very different than what we'd seen with Donna. So.
And the first person didn't seem to come out of the pit, homicidal, bloodlust, whatever you want to call it. But when they did later exhibit some of those traits, if you will, that seemed to be because they'd gotten addicted to a drug.
Yeah, I was going to say the first one didn't come out any more or less damaged than they were to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And the path they were going down, it was definitely, you know, they'd gotten hooked on some drugs provided by the Scarecrow.
Yeah, which is, you know, brilliance.
Ticked off the Scarecrow and then kept taking his drugs. And it's like, dude, that's just stupid.
Yeah.
So there were a couple of things that.
There were several times during the season when Stephen Amell's law of television writing was definitely in play.
Well, and I think one character in particular epitomized, I shall make bad decisions so we have good TV.
Yes.
Actually, I could name probably two or three that fell into that. We got a side story with Starfire's sister, and she became effectively a member of the Titans there for a while. And while that character is from, obviously, the Titans comic, the path they went down, radically different.
For me, it felt like they put the story in for two reasons. One, they wanted to do something with Starfire.
Yeah, they had to do something with her, so sure, why not that?
And they decided to totally drop what we were doing in the first few episodes with the one-night stand calling and being in touch with her.
Yeah, that came and then just poof, gone.
But then they also were trying to juxtapose chosen family with birth family.
Yeah.
And so, because no one else had, it, unless you're going to count Tim Drake, which we weren't seeing in the first half of the season, really.
Well, we see him at the first episode, I think, and then...
And then not for episodes and episodes.
Yeah. It was funny because him having a mother, a father, and a cousin is very different than in the comics. Obviously, he's got parents in the comics, but they get killed off, you know, I don't say in short order, but before too much longer. And I don't know that he ever had any cousins or other family.
Well, this seemed to be kind of a, you needed parents to disapprove, and you needed a cousin to be kind of polar opposite slash what he doesn't live up to.
Well, the good cousin, the bad cousin sort of dichotomy. Yeah. It was interesting. I liked what they did. It's a very different version of the Tim Drake character than we get in the comics. And there's an aspect of whenever you're going to take a comic book character into a TV or a movie, you're going to have to make some changes. That's, I think, a given. Certain things that work on the comic book page may not play as well on TV or movie or vice versa. But there's also an aspect of when it's a white male character, the odds of them getting recast to a different gender or ethnicity seems to go up quite a bit.
One of the things I felt they didn't play fair on with the Tim Drake character, or else I missed it, was in, it was either the last episode or the second to last episode. Suddenly we find out Dad was a cop before he and Mom opened the restaurant.
I think they had mentioned that sort of a thing before.
See, I didn't remember that from early on, but they're getting hassled by the cops left, right, and center. And they do not have any kind of positive relationship with any cops. And I'm like, he still has his badge from having been a cop, but he doesn't have a 10% discount for cops and a relationship with cops.
You'd think if he had been a cop in good standing and stuff, he would know a few, and yeah. And,
you know, that his delivery people wouldn't get hassled by the cops just for being delivery people from an Asian restaurant.
Well, and the thing is, they could have dealt with that of, he was a good cop, they are not.
Yes. Yes.
So a line or two of dialogue could have addressed that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The whole bit with the restaurant and stuff like that, fine, but totally not from the comics.
It felt to me like they were trying to throw in very real and very believable racism, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it was undercut by the dad had been a cop.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was a character where, again, they at times were going exactly how he'd been in the comics, and other times, let's go totally different.
Mm.
And it's just, it's a little puzzling. Having him kind of announce to the Scarecrow at the end, I am Tim Drake, you know, yada yada. It's like, dude, I know you don't have a secret identity yet, but this guy's just tried to take over Gotham. I wouldn't go brag who you are.
Secret identities were meaningless this season. And I mean, like Red Hood. He's only known as Red Hood. He's only known with the face mask on, and yet people are cheering for him as Red Hood when he's just a scrawny teenager with no mask on.
Well, are all the times that Nightwing is working with the Gotham PD and Tim Drake, who is a cop in this reality, is also working with them, but it was a little puzzling. Do they know he's Nightwing? Do they not?
Dick Grayson.
Dick Grayson, yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
But my point is,
yeah,
his identity was kind of weird. Starfire's, who are you? Oh, you're Starfire. I know, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I get there's a certain celebrity aspect for the Titans, but it was very confusing as to who could be incognito and who could not.
Yeah.
The whole thing was a little inconsistent. And again, the part about the secret identity I find hilarious about this thing is we have seen Bruce Wayne a lot in the series.
Mm-hmm.
We hear about Batman. We have yet to see, I think, this actor in a Batman suit.
I think all the GCPD officers who got bought by Scarecrow and brought stuff from the evidence locker to the Batcave had to die. Because otherwise, you've got random people knowing where the Batcave is.
Yeah, because they go through Wayne Manor to get it. Yeah, that whole bit didn't make sense.
I mean, the moment they just walk through Wayne Manor to the Batcave with the stuff from the evidence locker, I'm like, boy, you people are dead. Because how can the writers keep you alive?
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's either that or the mind wipe.
Well, that's true. And I say this often, but what a show or a movie ends on, what they leave you with,
mm-hmm.
is the final impression. It's critical to me. And I think that was the biggest letdown for me of this season. The final act by Nightwing and Raven
was not
heroic. It took a criminal person and pushed them over the edge, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, yeah. It was a tantamount to torturing him.
And I'm like, how am I supposed to feel good, either about what they did or about them as heroes?
Yeah, he was very much at their mercy, and it was more than just kicking him while he's down. There were a number of times where I think Nightwing in particular was not particularly heroic.
Yeah, and that worries me.
Yeah. There were also a couple of times I didn't think he was particularly bright. We'll surrender ourselves to the GCPD, and then we'll just walk right out.
Yeah, we'll get bailed out immediately.
I don't think it's going to work that way. I didn't think it was going to work the way it played out either, but...
Well, and the only person that they wanted surrendered was Nightwing, so he made all the Titans turn themselves into the police.
Well, including Blackstar or whatever, who wasn't even a Titan, really.
Well, and in an act of solidarity, even Crypto turned himself in.
Yeah, I do like that we keep getting Crypto. I was surprised there was some Kryptonite used this season. It sort of made sense, but not quite.
Poor Crypto.
It is fascinating to me that they're taking Superboy, who is a longstanding Titan, but the version of him they're taking is very early in his existence as a clone, etc., as we'd seen him as a clone last season,
mm-hmm.
which even predates his time in Young Justice, which is a Titans-ish series, but it was almost I don't want to say pre-Titans, in terms of age range and such. But to be pairing this early, innocent, childlike version of Superboy with a darker, almost, I don't say more corrupted version of Nightwing than we typically get in the comics, it was just an odd pairing.
Well, the girlfriend he ended up with.
I think that's hilarious on multiple levels. One, totally not from the comics. Two, she has solar powers. He's powered by solar. So there's some definite stuff those two could do.
Yeah.
And where they took that relationship, how quickly they took that relationship, surprised me.
For me, there was an aspect of she's not the world's best role model.
No, not at all.
And he's still at the toddler-esque age in terms of learning.
Mm-hmm. Emotional maturity.
Yeah. Yeah. And so in one episode, he feels betrayed by Nightwing. And basically it's you're doing the unforgivable.
Mm-hmm.
And then what, the next episode?
Maybe two later, he's forgiven. It's like, yeah, I get it.
But the next episode, he basically does the betraying and the unforgivable. And even in the moment is admitting it's a selfish thing I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in the next one where he's saying, I get it now.
I don't think the writers really knew what to do with Superboy because the emotional maturity was almost all over the spectrum. When there's the bomb that needs to be defused, he's somehow now a tech wizard at super speed with a magical cell phone app that will tell them will the device work or not.
Yeah, well, the photographic memory, the high intelligence that presumably some of which comes from Luther.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, and how many times did we get he's half an evil genius?
I'm willing to give the brilliance and all that even to the Superman half. So I don't have any problems with the photographic memory of the genius. But I guess I had more problems with the cell phone app that would say, yep, 100% successful or 80, 90, you know. He's got to get it down to, you know, zero failure rate kind of a thing. How does this thing do that? If you can gauge the success or failure perfectly, isn't that enough to knowledge to make it an unfailing system to begin with?
What got me on the emotional maturity aspect was when he realized he was going to fail and someone was going to die. Well, the first time he didn't know in time.
Well, when he witnessed the death, there didn't seem to be the emotional ramification I would have expected.
But the second time, when he knew he couldn't solve the problem in time, he purposely stayed to bear witness.
I think they could have played out that emotional arc way better than they did.
Yeah.
I was a little disappointed with that.
Because to me, the difference between he didn't have time to get away because he literally didn't have control. Someone else elsewhere detonated before he could do anything versus he knew he couldn't defuse it in time, but he had time to throw someone else clear.
Get somebody else out of danger while he stayed.
But he chose to bear witness.
I think there was some stuff they could have done to really progress him on the emotional maturity there.
Yeah.
That they may feel they did, but I don't feel they did.
No.
So that was a character I think they could have used a little bit better than they did. And it's funny because it was not a bad season. It's entertaining and whatnot, but
it's heavy.
It's heavy. It's crazy profane where it doesn't need to be.
No.
It's a little just darker than it needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
And almost, I don't want to say dystopic, although this season very much so. It's not. Again, the tone and style of the Wolfman Perez Titans.
It is amazing how quickly part of a town can get boarded up, graffitied over, newspaper on the windows.
It would be funny to go back through and try to get a sense of how many days elapsed over this season.
Yeah.
Because not that many. Yet there's already been time to totally seal off the city.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and put border guards around it, which is out of another Batman story.
Well, and I liked Donna Troy with the, I know you wouldn't think most people would want to get into Gotham. Yeah.
I love that version of Donna. She's funny. She's interesting. She's probably one of the best realized characters out of the bunch.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they use her well.
I think they could have done better by Hank. Hawk in the episode where he had his basically his second to last appearance of the season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he was mad at Jason and he was ready to just kind of come off, cut losses. And then Dawn gave him a talking to of basically no one else is at the point of ready to cut losses yet. You have to give them time to catch up. And then he takes a phone call and he's ready to give Jason a chance.
I wasn't sure if he was ready to give him a chance or just wanted to get him. I'll go talk to him so I can go snag him. And
but over the course of the phone call, he seemed to be more patient with him, giving him a chance. Think of the hoops he went through.
I guess I took some of that as he was doing that to find out where Jason was so we could physically talk to him.
But if all of that were true, then he would have been more on guard.
Yeah, fair enough.
Well, throughout.
Not the brightest of heroes.
That is true.
I think if they'd gone in a different direction, they had the possibility of taking Hawk and Dove into their own series.
Yeah.
Because I think they did some good stuff with those two. I know they're getting a fourth season, and I can see where they're getting it based on what they've done. I know two of the villains they're going to bring in, both of which are very much Titan villains.
Now, do we expect it to take place in San Francisco or to be a road trip season?
Given the villains, I expect it to be based in a city, not a road trip.
Okay.
They could make it work on a road trip sort of a thing, but it feels more like back in San Francisco where they're headed.
Okay. Because, I mean, we loaded up in an RV.
Yeah, that was... I'm curious if we'll see the RV on the other side.
It reeked of family vacation.
It did, but it's also funny because we barely saw the Titans Tower this season.
Mm-hmm.
We spend a ton of time at Wayne Manor. And I'm just wondering, is that because they changed where they shot it? They didn't have the old locations? What?
Mm.
And depending when they film the next one and what they want to do, if your set is an RV that you can drive wherever you need to, could work.
I think part of why they went with Wayne Manor and one of the things that frustrated me throughout the season was either Dick Grayson and Jason Todd's bedrooms were virtually identical or Jason Todd had moved into Dick Grayson's bedroom.
I took it as he had taken over, which is a little creepy in and of itself because Wayne Manor seems huge.
It was just hard to tell.
Well, and I couldn't tell where Grayson was sleeping when he moved back in, because it didn't seem to be that room.
And yet at times it did seem to be that room, which is why I wondered, yeah, were they virtually identical? What was going on?
I don't know. I think some of that may just come down to, you know, not wanting to redress the set, but in and of itself, that's a little lazy.
I think they did something clever that I missed. And I say that because did younger pseudo-brother look up to older pseudo-brother, and that's why he wanted the Flying Graysons on the wall, and either the same bedroom or the same posters? I think there was something about the relationship between them that we were supposed to get out of the virtually identical or else same bedrooms that I missed.
It's just weird because that relationship didn't exist until after Jason had left Gotham to hang with the Titans in the first season. Yeah, I'm not sure what they were after on that. Likewise, I'm not sure if when they introduced Oracle, the computer and the voice, if that voice was supposed to be reminiscent of something or what.
The one thing we never actually got back to was Molly.
Never got back to Molly. I'm a little surprised we never got a backstory on how the first Commissioner Gordon died.
Agreed.
Because now Barbara is Commissioner Gordon. And it was interesting that they were very much playing up the romance between Dick and Barbara. But then in the last episode or two, when Dick's having the afterlife sequence or whatever it was, he sees his daughter that presumably seems to be his and Starfire's daughter, which again fits in the comics. Because in the comics, Robin had dated various people over the years, Batgirl being definitely one of them. In comes the New Teen Titans era in the 1980s. He's with Starfire at the time. They become an item, very serious for quite some time, like a decade or two. But then it kind of gets, and this is back when he's kind of out of the Titans book and has his own book, is more Gotham-centric or whatever. That's when it starts to be a bit more of, okay, let's get him back together with Barbara Gordon.
Mm.
So I really think they've missed the boat in the comics of never really having done a good story with Barbara Gordon and Starfire.
Oh, yeah.
Because they definitely have, you know, Nightwing in common, but they come at life from such very different vantage points.
Mm-hmm.
And the Starfire character here is so radically different than either the comic book version or the cartoon version. Because the cartoon one is almost this bubbly, naive, misunderstanding alien, whereas the one in the comics is very passionate, very emotional, very forthright.
Mm-hmm.
And this version here doesn't feel all that alien.
No, she doesn't.
And then for them to revamp her powers and how she had the traditional Starfire powers for a while or whatnot, or Starfire-esque powers, because it was more a heat generation versus a solar blast that she has in the comics. And of course, she can fly in the comics. Did they not know what to do with the character? Why the flipping around of the powers and stuff? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, it seemed to be they were going for a jealousy storyline, and I almost want to say an ironic twist on it.
Yeah, but the whole visions and all of that stuff. Okay, I see where they went, but why was she having the visions the second time around? The first time, it seemed to be because of her sister, even right. though that made no sense.
Well, they say her sister had ESP and was trying to communicate with her telepathically.
Yeah, because we saw no evidence of her having ESP other than that.
Exactly. Right. And the second set made even less sense.
Yeah. Well, and was a little confusing because it was then seeming like Gar was potentially having visions with the bats and stuff like that, although that didn't seem to be what was happening.
Mm-mm.
And I thought there was also some stuff that was making it seem like Nightwing was having hallucinations of some sort.
Yeah, but then I wondered if Nightwing had been exposed to one of Scarecrow's concoctions.
Maybe. I mean, they tell it, I was going to say they tell a decent story, but they tell a story decently, just not overly logically.
Well, I didn't care for what they gave for Barbara Gordon for 6 years ago.
Oh yeah, she's an art thief versus Batgirl. She was essentially a second-rate Selina Kyle.
I did not like the she was a thief, she got Nightwing to be her yes. partner in crime for a while.
Yeah.
It goes back to these are supposed to be our heroes. These are supposed to be our role models.
Yeah. This seemed like it would not have taken much for them to have gone into a permanent life of crime or whatever. It made no sense. Batman seemed to be totally unaware of it. It also brings in the flashback scene where they had Lady Vic or whatever, who was then a threat in the present day for an episode, and then poof, she's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Yet this is somebody that Scarecrow brought in and told Jason, I've got somebody else. I don't need you.
Yeah.
And then suddenly he doesn't have somebody else.
Yeah.
So a little confusing. And kind of funny because I think at a certain level, that character, while older, kind of reminded me of Ravager and stuff from last season. The one who was Deathstroke's daughter.
Ah, yeah, I can see that.
Who, again, no sign of this season. Of course, she and Jericho were kind of dealt with there at the end.
Yeah.
I think they've got a lot of characters in play, a lot of ideas they're trying to incorporate. They're mishmashing a lot of Batman stories in this. Really, the most Titan-esque aspect was the subplot with Starfire's sister and such. And even that almost seemed to be like a setup for something next season or something. Like a slow burn on that, and I don't know where they're going with it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's enjoyable, but honestly, I would like it a lot more if they got rid of the profanity.
Yes.
Lightened the tone a little bit, and really made them more heroic.
We did basically two nights of binging, and then two episodes.
Yeah.
And it's exhausting binging it. It's heavy.
Well, it's heavy. It's depressing.
Yeah.
It's dystopic. I mean, very much in Gotham, particularly.
Yeah. But I didn't expect to come out of four or five episodes with just that, okay, I feel weighed down having watched this.
Mm-hmm.
And almost wishing we'd switch to something, almost a sitcom, something light, bright, happy for the final hour of viewing just to take the load back off.
Well, it's funny because you look at like the Disney Plus Marvel shows and they have a lot of action. They've got a lot going on. But they're a bit more positive and upbeat, even in their darker moments at times.
They do a better job with the comic relief.
Yeah.
I can't think of many moments of comic relief in this.
No, and I think that was intentional. I think they were trying to be the serious primetime superhero show.
I think some shows mistake comic relief for undercutting their serious tone and not recognizing that comic relief gives you a necessary break and really gives a
balance.
Resets the levels so that you can notch it back up again.
Yeah, and that was something I think like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, that series did really well. And it's funny because we're at the point where this season, the Titans were protecting Gotham after Batman had left.
Mm-hmm.
Over in Batwoman, either one, was protecting Gotham after Batman had left. There's talk of a Gotham Knights show where A. Robin and the kids of some of the Batman villains are protecting Gotham after Batman has left. And it is hilarious for me to realize that we are 50 years past, over 50 years past, having a primetime Batman show. Yet there are all these other shows, I would lump Arrow in with this, that are primetime superhero shows that are wanting to be Batman shows just without Batman.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's any good reason not to have a Batman show on.
There was one episode here where they riffed on the old same bat time, same bat channel.
Oh, yeah, with the Scarecrow and same crane time, same crane channel or whatever. Yeah.
Well, and there was another part in that same segment he was doing where he riffed on the way they used to do the promos for those episodes.
Well, and they may have thought that was their comic relief.
They may have. But to me, it was just a callback to the old 60s Batman.
Well, and in a way that makes no sense in the narrative universe.
Agreed.
So that was, yeah.
Somewhere between a callback and an Easter egg of, yes, we remember the history of Batman.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I'd categorize it along those lines. It's a wink, wink, nudge, nudge to the audience.
Yeah.
That, again, if you think about it in the terms of the narrative universe, does boggle the mind.
Yeah.
Because they don't have those references to lean on. I mean, to me, I thought it was more Easter egg-ish when Barbara pulls the red phone out of the desk and we realize it's essentially the bat phone, even though it's a red cell phone.
Yeah.
Or the Titan signal with the T instead of the bat and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Those, it's like, okay, I get the humor there. I see what you're riffing on. And it makes sense in the narrative universe, even outside of the references from the 60s show and the bat signal and stuff like that. I'm curious what other characters they're going to bring in. They've referenced Argus quite a bit here. They referenced Roy Harper, who was Speedy, Arsenal, and probably Red Hood, or Red Arrow, I should say, and a few other names in the comics. Although I don't think we've seen him in the Titans show, so his name drop was new.
Mm-hmm.
But there was the possibility that Donna may go work for Argus, which could bring him in, and that could be interesting. Because I'm curious, does he have a backstory with the Titans in this world? Does he not? I just don't know what other Titan characters they may want to bring in.
Mm.
We saw Gizmo, the villain, very briefly at the beginning of the season. He's one of the members of the Fearsome Five. Shimmer was mentioned here at the end. She was another member. One of the characters, the villains they're bringing in next season, was a member. But that still leaves, you know, a few other options for villains. Don't know if they're going to bring them in or not. I do know of another villain they're bringing in, but that's not one where I think there's a particular go-to Titan hero to bring in with. And it's funny because the most obvious Titan I think to bring in would be Cyborg, but they're not going to do that because he's over, I think, in the Doom Patrol series.
Oh.
Which is set in another universe, even though there was a backdoor pilot sort of it in the first season of Titans. It's weird. So I'm generally liking but not loving what they're doing here.
Yeah.
I see where they've got some good storytelling in terms of how they're telling individual scenes and whatnot, how they're pacing it in the story they're choosing to tell, not as crazy about, and just the profanity and I think almost heaviness and inaccessibility, I think, to a casual audience is a mistake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For me, I want my heroes to be more heroic. I'm fine with them being flawed, imperfect, relatable. But there were just so many times, well, I spent most of the season wondering if we were going to redeem Jason Todd. And
I don't feel they did. I feel they excused.
I feel like they threw away every opportunity they had to put him even on a path towards redemption. And it was like they just decided to give up on a character they'd invested us in.
I guess the question is, do we get him next season? Is he on a path of redemption? I could see a way they could go with this other villain they're bringing in, where he could be a replacement character in one of the main arcs from that villain in the New Titans series, filling somebody else's role. But if they do that, either with that character or the one who originally felt, it feels redundant with things they've already done over the course of the three seasons.
Yeah, I see.
So, and I don't know that him on a redemption path outside of where the Titans are makes sense. So I don't know where they're going with that character.
I just feel like they chose to give up on him.
Yeah, I don't think they had time. Well, given some of the stuff he did, it would have been really hard to get him past that.
But they had a few opportunities throughout the season for him. Well, Scarecrow betrayed him, and he still turned back to Scarecrow. Things like that. There were opportunities for him to come back from the path he was on, and they just kept recommitting him.
The big difference with Jason in this show versus the comics. In the comics, he was a hero who went too far and crossed some lines. Here, he became a villain.
Yes.
And it's not that you were a hero that made mistakes. It's you were very, not only unheroic, but blatantly villainous in a few places.
Yes.
And I don't know how they could get the rest of the Titans fully past that.
And I think that's my problem.
Yeah. I do feel they're probably going to try next season, though. And I could actually see using him, Jason, trying to be on a path to redemption as the avenue to bring in this other villain.
Hmm. Interesting.
But we'll see where they go.
Yeah, we'll see.
I'm not sure when the fourth season's even going to, if it's being written or where it's at in the writing stage, when it's going to film, or much less when it's going to air. So plenty of time for all of that.
Yeah.
Anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.